All right, we're starting here on the top of Pei Vavim and Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing what exactly is the case of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in the Mishnah, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in the Mishnah says that she takes a neder which restricts her husband in Hana'ah. The neder is not effective immediately because the husband doesn't need to be made for the neder for the current situation, but rather, Shema Yigarshena v'tei Asura Alav. But her fear is that they will divorce in the future, and then it'll become problematic. How exactly do you frame a neder which will come into effect in the future? So the assumption being, and this is the question that the Gemara asked, seems like when Shmuel paskins aloha like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that Shmuel believes that you can be maktish davar shelo bali olam, that you're able to be maktish something that will only come into effect in the future, because what she is doing is restricting her masei yadayim after she leaves the auspices of her husband, after her husband no longer has rights to the Masei Yadayim. So the Gemara went through a number of iterations because we find that Shmuel seemingly does not believe that you can be Maktish Davar Shelo Bali Olam. And so the Gemara came up with the following solution, which is, Vomereti Kadshu Yadai Lo Sehen. It's a case or situation in which the woman is Maktish, her hands, which are Itvahu Ba'olam, that is something that already exists, and then she is maktish the production of her hands, but in tying it to her hands, that solves the problem, because now we have davar she'idu li'olam. The Gemara then challenged that and said, does that work? Because right now she still doesn't have a right to be maktish, whatever she produces. So the Gemara said she qualifies the statement and says, amra l'chi migarsha. When I get divorced, then it will go into effect. Now over here, whether she explicitly says that she's Magdish Yadeh Dai Leosehen, or whether that's what we assume she meant in her neder, that's a Machloket Rishonim that we dealt with earlier in the Masechta with regards to whether you have to explicitly say it, or in these situations do we deem it as if you said it this way, because that's the only way that the neder will take effect. But either way, that's what the Gemara thinks is the solution. And then the Gemara says, why does that work? Because even if she says that when it'll take effect when I am divorced, why does that work? She's not divorced now. And why should it go into effect when she does become divorced? So that we have the top of Pei Vavon Aleph, Amar Rabbi Ila, Umay Ilu, in a situation in which, Omer Lechaveiro, Sadezu, Sha'ani Mocher Lecha, this field which I will sell you in the future, Lisha Ekachena Mimcha, when I buy it back from you, Tavdish, then it will be Kodesh. Milo Kodesh, doesn't that work? So you see that you have the ability to affect an item that in the future will be in your possession. Now, right away, Matkifla Rabbi Yirmiyah says, how can you compare the cases? Midomi. So the zul shani mochelecha hashta biyadehi is currently in the possession of the individual. Isha biyadal akdish maseyadah. The woman does not have that in the current state. The woman in the current state does not have the ability to be makdishar maseyadayim. In the example that he gave, you own the field currently, you are going to sell it, and then going to repurchase it. So maybe since you have the power currently to be magdishit, you also have the power to be magdishit in the future, even though it's going to leave your possession and come back into your possession. Now the Ran notes that obviously Rabbi Elah knew that this wasn't an exact comparison. So then why did he bring it into effect? So it might be because of the nature, and we're going to see this through the Shakal V'Tari over here, of the nature of the differences between these cases. These cases are not identical. Now, what Rabbi Yirmiyah pointed out was a deficit in the example that he brought. In the case of the woman has no control today, and she's trying to be Makdish in the future. Here, he controls it today, he's going to sell it, buy it back, and then be Makdish it. So since he has control today, it seems that that case is more likely to be able to be Makdish versus the case that we have here. On the other hand, we're going to see in a second, there's also a deficit in the case of the field as well that is not true by the case of the woman, which is, in the case of the woman, she still controls what we call the goof, the principal amount or the karka. She controls herself. The only thing that is currently encumbered to her husband is her output, or what we call the peirot, the production that she's going to have. So she still, throughout this process, maintains a certain level of ownership over herself. As opposed to the field, when he has the field currently, is going to sell it and repurchase it, when he sells it, he's going to sever his relationship entirely to the field. That means both the principal, the karka itself, as well as the peirot, is the production. So what Rabbi Ilo's suggestion is here, is that yes, I understand there's a deficit in the case that I'm bringing that doesn't make it exactly comparable, which is over there, he's gonna own it currently, and over here she doesn't own it. But nevertheless, this case also has something that pushes it in the other direction, which is that the woman maintains control over the period, whereas by the field you don't. So he says, look, I have a chumrah here, kula here, kula here. Maybe they should wipe each other out and they should be equal. Rabbi Yirmiyah is unwilling to accept that and says, look, there's a fundamental flaw in your logic, which is the fact that he currently controls it versus the fact that she does no control over it currently. That, yes, you're missing little pieces, and that's what he's trying to show you. That's what the Ran explains over here, that even though they look like different cases, and it's so clear, Rabbi Yirmiyah's question is an obvious question, nevertheless, Rabbi Ilah was aware of that, what Rabbi Yirmiyah was going to say, but he also knew that there was another side that also weakens the comparison, but if you offset those two, maybe you get a case that's equal. So Rabbi Yirmiyah rejects that and says its ownership is so crucial or essential to this, that that's what governs. So Adami Allah. So it should be like this case. Omer Chaviro, Sadeh Zo Shemacharti Lecha, the field that I already sold to you, the Shekeachena Mimcha Takdish. When I buy it back from you, it will be Kodesh, Mi Kodesha. In that case, it fails to be Kodesh. And the woman should be the same case. She owns nothing. She doesn't own it now. She's trying to be Makdish in the future. It doesn't work. So then Mati La Rapapa, Rapapa says, Mi Dami. Wait a minute. I understand that you're challenging Rabbi Ilo from the perspective that this is important, that current ownership is important. But who says that the other aspect is not important also? Because Gabi Zvina Psika Miltayu. By the case of the sale, there's a complete severing of the relationship between the parties. Gabi Sha Mi Psika Milta, there isn't this severing of the relationship. So your comparison, you're right, with regards to current ownership now is equal. But you didn't equal out the other aspect of it, which is by the field, you own nothing of this field right now. And you're trying to say, in the future, when I buy it, I'm going to makdish it. The woman also doesn't have control today. But that's all she's lacking. She still has principal ownership over her body, over her hands. And it's only the output that is encumbered. So maybe they're not comparison. Haludami, the comparable way should be like this. Elomer lechaveiro, sadeh zu, shemishkanti lecha. This field, which I gave over as collateral to you, likesh epedena mimcha, when I redeem it from you, takdish, it'll be kodesh. So now you have a parallel case, because a mashkon is a situation in which you still have principal ownership, you've just encumbered it to the other party for the payment of the loan. So what he says is, when I redeem it, or when I repay the loan, when I take repossess it, it'll be kodesh. And the woman is saying the same thing. I currently don't have control over the output because it belongs, it's encumbered to my husband. On the other hand, what I could do is, I could in the future take back. And when I take it back, then I'm makdish when I'm taking it back. But the cases are not exactly comparable because who has control? Right. So that's why, that's it. So matkilar shisha breder avidi midomi. That sounds, now you've got the case. What we have succeeded now is coming up with a parallel case, which is yes, no ownership up front. Principal ownership without output ownership. In the future, I want to be makdishit. Looks very similar, except for this problem, which is midami sadeh biado liftoto. In the case of the mashkon, the controlling party is the one who's makdish. He can redeem it when he chooses to redeem it, and then it's his. And therefore, maybe that is enough control that he can be makdishit. Versus isha biadali itkaresh. The woman doesn't have control over whether she gets divorced or not. She might be able to say here, okay, when I get divorced, but she still doesn't have enough control to determine the point of divorce. And therefore, the cases are not parallel. And that's the question here. Now, the truth is that that's not so simple, that the woman does not have control here in terms of divorce. One question, which is the ability of the woman to force a divorce, which is Tosafot as a shita, like this in Gitin, and many of the Rishonim note that if a woman says that Ma'usalai, that the guy is disgusting or I don't want to be with him, then Beit Din at some point will compel him to give her a divorce if she says that it's an untenable situation. So we do have a situation where she could precipitate the divorce. Nevertheless, we would still not consider it to be in her control because she still has to get the Beit Din involved and still not her control. She can precipitate the possibility of divorce, but she still can't absolutely control it. So many say that that's not enough of a reason to say it. The Ran over here notes that she has the right to do it because we pass on like Rav Huna. And Rav Huna says that a woman can at any point say, Eini nizonit, I'm not going to take sustenance from you, or you will not feed me, ve'eini osa, and I will not produce. So the woman has the right to take back control over her maaseh yadayim. If that's the case, it's no different than the case of mashkon. Just like mashkon, the guy can exercise the right to take back the mashkon as soon as he wants to redeem it or pay back the loan. So it's over here. She can decide she wants out of this quid pro quo relationship where he's giving her mizonot, she's giving her maaseh yadayim, and she can say, I don't want that anymore. And she can't take control. Then she doesn't even have to get divorced. She has a way to undo it even without getting divorced. So the Ran says that we must not be speaking about those items, because in those items, truly, she has control over them. But rather, we're talking about the items that are mentioned in the Mishnah Ketubot. We've mentioned this a number of times lately in the Gemara Nedarim as well, but they're mentioned in the Mishnah Ketubot. These are the items that the woman is obligated to do her husband, even if, number one, she says, any nizonet v'eini osa, whether she brings in shfachot into the marriage. There are certain minimum things that she has to do, the seven minimum things that she has to do with her husband, which have to do with the engendering the intimacy and the closeness of the relationship. Said like making the bed, washing his hands, his feet, his face, certain items, giving him a kos, serving him, certain items where those are obligations of the woman, irrespective of whatever else is going on in their relationship. So the Ran says that that's what the Gemara is focused on here. There's an issue where the woman cannot get out of it without divorce. And therefore the woman does not have control over those items, and she cannot therefore be makdish, that output or that value, to Hekdesh. Then the Gemara says, Adodamyo elolomer chaveiro, so this zo shemishkanti lecha le'esu shanim, that this sadeh that I encumbered to you for 10 years, likashe epidena mimcha takdish, when I redeem it, then I'll be makdishit. Milo kodesha, and again, there isn't it kodesh, and it works. So now we've created seemingly a similar situation, which is, we have, in the front end, we have no ownership. We have, during the period of time, principal ownership without payroll ownership. And then we have an impossibility to redeem it. The husband has the right of divorce. She doesn't have the right of divorce. Over here, the person who gave over the mashkon gave it for 10 years. He doesn't have the ability to take it back. He's locked into place. The Gemara says it's still not exactly alike. Matif l'Ravashi, midomi. Hotam kitz. Isha mitla kitzuta. Over there, there's still a term limit. It's still for 10 years. After 10 years, it will automatically expire, and it will become his again, or his right to redeem it at that point in time. And by the woman, there's no expiry date. There's no time at which there's an automatic divorce, or there's an automatic severing of the relationship, or where she gains control. So maybe again, by the mashkon, the fact that he will at some point gain that control back gives him sufficient control to be makdishit into the future. Whereas the woman who has no ability to control that situation, maybe in that case she cannot be makdishit. Ella. Here the Gemara comes to the conclusion, Amar of Ashi, Shaini Konamot. Konamot are different. Dechi Kedushat HaGuf Domi. Because they have the same status as Kedushat HaGuf. So right here again, Shaini Konamot, how it's phrased, or how she uses the terminology konamot, goes back to what I said at the beginning of the shir, whether she has to explicitly say that, which is the way that Rashi terms it over here. The others suggest again that even if she doesn't use the term, or she doesn't express it in this way, it's as if she expressed it this way, because it's the only way that it will take effect. Now what does that mean, that konamot are like kedushat haguf? So all the Rishonim point out over here, both the Balei HaTosafot and the Rosh, and the Ran all say the same thing here, which is, because just like the Kiddushei Mizbeach, when you makdish something to the Mizbeach, ain lo pidyon, there's no way to redeem it. So either it ends up in the Mizbeach, or if it gets a mum, and then it's ruined from the Mizbeach, then you can possibly redeem it. As long as it is ra'oi the Mizbeach, there is no ability to redeem it. And same is true by a konamot. Konamot, you have no ability to redeem the konam, and since, or to release the Isur through redemption. And that's why konamot look like kedushat haguf. And that's the way that the Rishonim learn here. And they all point out that this is the Shita of Rashi, that the view here that we're talking about Kedushat HaGuf or Kedushat Mizbeach, and that's the only time when that has this effect, that is the Shita of Rashi. We'll talk later on that the Rabbeinu Tam has an alternate view, but that's Rashi's perspective. Now the Rosh makes one interesting note over here. The Rosh says that the reason why you cannot be Podet, you would think here, the reason you can't be Podet Kedushat Mizbeach is because it's such a strong form of Kedushah, therefore you can't redeem it. Meaning Kedushat Damim, which is only for its value, there you can redeem it because it's a weaker form of Hekdesh. On the other hand, by Konamot, what's the din? So now most of Rishonim say are seemingly saying the same thing, which is Konamot are so strong that you can't redeem them, you can't take away the Isur. The Rosh, on the other hand, says the reason you can't redeem Konamot is because they are too weak. It says, "Dolo alim yisruayu litfos pidyonam." This is a concept that we see many places in Shas, that the inability to redeem can come from two possibilities. It can either come because the Kedusha is too strong, and therefore you can't redeem it, or the Kedusha is too weak, and therefore you can't redeem it. Right, so you can't move it. Since it's not a significant enough of item, or substantial enough item, you can't redeem it, you can't move the Kedusha from the object to something else. And that's what the Rosh suggests over here, that Kevin Shalon Yassar Kimal Adam Echad. Konam only focuses on one individual. It's not like Kedushat Mizbeach, which is to everybody. So the Rosh, despite the fact that he says what everybody else says here, that they're similar because there's no Pidyon, he says the reason behind the Pidyon is different. And that might have impact, we'll see here, in terms of those that are Cholek. So now, Uki the Rava, and this is Rava the Shitato, the Amar Rava, Hekdesh, Chametz, Vishichrur, Mafkim Midei Shibud. That all these three items have the ability to sever a person's encumbrance over a property. So for instance, Hekdesh, in an instance where a person has given something as collateral to another party, an animal, as an aputuki, which is directed collateral for this loan, the person then is Magdish the animal, that Hekdesh is powerful enough to remove the creditor's right over here to take this animal as collateral. He'll have to go get other collateral. He'll get his loan back, but he cannot use this directed collateral. The Hekdesh removes his ownership from this animal. Now again, this is according to Rashi, who says that that's only true by Hekdesh, that it's Kedushat HaGuf. When you're Magdish the Mizbeach, you do Hekdesh Damim, it does not have that power. The Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says that even Kedushat Damim has that power to take away the Shibud. What about our Gemara over here, which says, Konamot techi kedushat haguf dami, they're like kedushat haguf. But some say that that's just a comparison. It happens to be they're like kedushat haguf, but that doesn't mean it's exclusive. Others do not have that girsa according to the Rabbeinu Tam and said that this girsa was eliminated from the Gemara. Or the Rabbeinu Tam himself suggests that the only time that you have an ability to not sever that relationship is when it comes to karkaot, when it comes to land. So as opposed to liens on metaltalim, where even Kedushat Tamim or Kedushat Aguf can sever it, when it comes to liens on karka, there only Kedushat Aguf can sever it, not Kedushat Damim. And that's how he explains this whole sugya, according to his shita. Now, we also have chametz, is mafkia midei shibud. That's a case where a Jew has borrowed money from a non-Jew, and he gives his chametz as collateral to the non-Jew. But Pesach has come now, and the collateral is now sitting with the goy. What is the status of that chametz? Is that chametz that is avar alav Pesach, or is that, or you're in violation of balirei bayimatzed, or is that chametz now belong to the goy? The answer is that chametz has the power to eliminate the shibud. So the goy's shibud lien on that chametz is severed by the fact that there's an isur chametz, and chametz, the isur chametz now takes away the shibud and makes it it's the Jew's property. So Jewish property is in violation of Bayre Bayimitzeh. It also becomes Chametz Shabar Lava Pesach. And Chametz has that same power. Shichrur also works that way. If one frees a slave that was posted as collateral towards a loan, if the master of the slave then frees the slave, that takes away the encumbrance and wipes out the shibud that the individual had over this Eved, this slave. So all these three items have that power to sever the shibud. And over here, that's what's happening. The woman is being magdish, maseya deha. The husband has a lien on her output. Tzarek they should then override the shibud of the husband. But then the obvious question is, Ihochi, lama lei shemi yigarshena. Wait a minute. Then why does she have to wait until she gets divorced? If the hekdesh is strong enough to override the shibud, why does she have to wait to get divorced? It should override it immediately. And so then why do you have to wait? Our Gemara here is missing a piece, which is found in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is that the Gemara there says, Alima lume l'shibude de baal. That Chazal strengthened the shibud of the baal to block against hekdesh. And then the Gemara would continue, Tnei va'od shema yigarshena. And then the Gemara would say that also, don't write that shema yigarshena, but va'od. Not only that, but shema yigarshena. This is the issue, which is shema yigarshena. So now, what's interesting here is that the Gemara in Tubot has that girsa. Some of the Rishonim acknowledge maybe that it wasn't in our Gemaras, but they basically say that that's what the Gemara meant anyway. That the Gemara meant to say this, which is, if she has the Hekdesh, which can override the Shibud of the Baal, then immediately she should be able to read Makdish or Masei Yadayim. Why is the problem in the future? It should be now. The answer to that question is that Chazal strengthened the power of the Shibud of the Baal that blocks her ability to be Makdishit. And that they didn't want that to happen. They didn't want this type of Shibud to be undermined. So how do they protect it? They gave it superpowers. So the Shibud here has superpowers that blocks her ability to undo the Shibud through Hekdesh. And back there in the Gemara in Tubot that discusses this, it also, there the Rishonim discuss other places where maybe Chazal strengthened the Shibud of the individual in order to block the ability of parties to come and just willy-nilly take away the Shibud or the rights or the liens of the individual. So now that we have that, that the Shibud is strong enough, in a sense, you're back to square one, because then if his Shibud is so strong that it blocks her Hekdesh, then again, she's trying to be Makdish something in the future, and then you're back to square one, which is, how does she Makdish something in the future? That's what the Ron asks over here. How does this solve the problem? The Ron answer is that it's different this time. Because in this case, fundamentally, she has the capability to knock off the Shibud and to be Makdish today. Chazal stopped that. They blocked it. But because she does have that fundamental right, therefore in the future when she's Makdishit, it's as if she has control today to be Makdishit, and when she does it in the future, it takes effect. Even though for a technical reason it won't work today because Chazal blocked it, nevertheless, that doesn't take away her right to be Makdishit in the future. And that's the way that the Ron explains this. Now, none of the Rishonim here make a comment like they did back on Pehei, where here the Gemara is missing something from Tubot. They don't say over here, well, Lashon Nedarim Mishuneh, or the Nedarim has a different way of doing things. They don't say that. Versus in Pehei, where the Gemara did not match up with the Gemara in Kiddushin, there the Rosh brings a line like that down. For that reason, it seems to be, and you can see that within the Perushim of the Tosafot and the Rosh as well, that they did have this in the Girsan, because they explain a line that we don't have, or it's not found in our Gemara, which is Alume Alumua Rabbonim Leshibudei Deval. And both Tosafot and the Rosh comment on a line like that, which is not found in our Gemara. So it means that they obviously did have that girsa, which would help out here, because if they have that girsa, then it makes a lot more sense, the Gemara, the flow of the Gemara now, which is that the strengthening of the husband's shibud is what blocks her, but we still have the issue of Shemi Yigarshenu in the future, where then the shibud will disappear, and she can be Makdishit. And again, to answer the problem of isn't that in the future, the answer is that yes, because today, she really does have the right to be Makdishit. Chazal removed that right. But in removing that right, they still let her have the ability to be Makdish into the future, because fundamentally, she has the right to be Makdishit today. That's the answer given. Now, as far as the Tanakhama, or those that argue in Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, there you can now see the weakness in the Pshat of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, and they could argue on any one of those points. They could argue on the point that, well, Chazal took away her right, but they still left her with the fundamental right to be Makdishit. You could argue on that point. And you could say, once Chazal removed her right to be Makdishit today, then she has no control today. She doesn't have control today. She also can't do it in the future. And that's probably what the Tanakhama could say to argue on Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. The other possibility is they could take up the position of the Rosh. The Rosh over here says that Shibud Aguf equals Konamot, and just like Hekdesh is Mafkia Midei Shibud, so too are Konamot, You could look at the Rosh and say, wait a minute, that the comparison is not a great comparison. Yes, they both lack the ability to redeem them, but they lack the ability to redeem them for different reasons, which is that Kedushim is Be'achad, the Allah cannot be redeemed because they have such strong Kedusha. And for that reason, that type of Hekdesh should be able to override a Shibud. And then a Konamot can't be redeemed because what the Rosh says is it's too weak a Kedusha. So since it's such a weak Kedusha, it cannot be redeemed, maybe in that case, it's also not strong enough to wipe out the Shibud or to take out the lien. And that might be the Shita of the Tanakama. Or the Tanakama can argue fundamentally on this comparison between Konamot and Kedushat Mizbeach, Kedushat Aguf. So you have different ways for the Tanakama to argue on Rabbi Yochanan and Minuri based on the different things that we saw all the way along that are weaknesses in this pshat or in this explanation of Rabbi Yochanan and Minuri. Okay, now we start the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nadra Ishto, his wife took a neder, the Savur Shinadra Bito, and he thought it was his daughter. Now, with regards to his wife and his daughter, he has the right in both instances to be made for the neder, just he's got the wrong person. Or Nadra Bito, the Savur Shinadra Ishto, or his daughter took a neder, and he thought it was his wife. Nadra Bin Nazir, Vishavar Shinadra Bin Kurban. She took a neder Nizirut, but really she was taking a neder Bin Kurban, means she was Oser something Bin Kurban. Like a korban, nadra b'korban, or she took the neder being osir herself in something like a korban. Savur, and he thought she nadra b'nazir, and he thought that she had taken a neder nizirut. Nadra mitainim, she took a neder that restricted herself in figs. The savur she nadra minanavim, and he thought it was about grapes. Nadra minanavim, or she took a neder that involved grapes. The savur, and he thought she nadra minatainim, that she did it with regards to figs. So now over here you have three different mistakes that are being made. In the first instance, you have a mistake about who is the party taking the nether. Is it his wife or his daughter? The second mistake is the content of the nether, the nature of the nether. Is this a nether nizirut? Or is this a nether b'isur, to create some sort of isur? The third mistake is he knows the person, he knows what type of nether is, but the object upon which the neder is being stated, he doesn't know. There's a mistake in the application of the neder. There's a mistake. So in all these instances where there's a mistake, then harizei yachzor v'yafer. He should go back and be made fair the neder. So the first one is not successful. It fails. And he has to do it a second time. Now, many point out that that's not unique to the case where he was made fair the first one, then he has to go back and be made fair again when he knows the information.
What about if he did?
Right. So even if he was mikayemet, or even if he was shotek, in all those cases, if he has that misinformation, it was done bitaot, then he has a right to be made fair, or he has to go back and be made fair the nether. So in all those cases, it seems like here that he has to go back and do it, and whatever he said originally is not meaningful because it was a taot, it was a mistake. And the Gemara here is going to say that that is a derivative of a pasuk, a limud out of the pasukim, which is a little interesting because you would have thought, why do you need a pasuk here? We have what we call a taut. He made a mistake. He had misinformation. So any action that he took is clearly flawed because of the misinformation that he had. And so therefore, why do we need a pasuk to tell us that that's the case, that he has misinformation? The answer might be the application of the item, which is, say for instance, he is Mayfair, the Neder Nizirut of his wife. So then you might have thought to say that if he says, look, if even if it was my daughter, I would have been Mayfair anyway. And he made it clear to us that he's not interested in a Neder Nizirut, then maybe we should automatically extrapolate that Hafarah to the other side. The pasuk tells you that it doesn't work that way. You have to know, and when you make a mistake, you can't use it as a Hafarah or Kiyum. It doesn't work at all until you have all the information. All the information means who took the nether, what type of nether it is, and where is it manifest, the nether. All three of those items have to be known to you. Now, that's what the Mishnah says. The Gemara says, the Memra, how do we know this? Diani Ota Davkahu. That they learn it out of Yani Ota. When the husband is disturbed by the nether, or he wants to reject the nether, that's when it works. So the Gemara here is seemingly saying that the word Ota means her, and not just any person. And that's how the Gemara here learns out the fact that you have to know the particular woman about which you're being made fair the neder. So over there, when it says that he's going to dissuade or her father is going to reject the neder, it says otah, which is a miut, saying her and not someone else, or by the Baal, it's in Yom Shema Aisha Yani Ota. Again, Ota specifies her, and the antecedent of that is the person who took the nether, his wife or his daughter. Okay, so what you're asking is, that only explains to us one of the three mistakes that were mentioned in the Mishnah, which is who took the nether. What about when the mistake is about the content of the nether, or the mistake is about where it's manifest? What happens there? So some of the Rishonim say that Yani Ota covers all of those items, and that it's extrapolated. Yani Ota shows us that the particularities of the nether are important. And if you can't just be made for anything, you have to know what you're talking about. So the Torah tells us about which party is making the nether is important, and from that we extrapolate the information. The Rosh over here says that actually, he brings Sfarim Acherim, that have Shemakir Isha HaNoderet, that our Gemara would continue like this, Deini Ata Dafkohu, because then he's Makir Isha HaNoderet, he has to know which woman. Then, Umash Manami Aktiv V'Hefer Et Nidra, that he is made for her nether, Shemakir HaNeder, he has to know exactly what the nether is. So the Rosh, in addressing what seems your question, says, there is another limud here, and that limud tells us that not only does he have to know who is taking the nether, but he has to be made for Nidra, her nether, which means the particulars of that nether. So the Rosh brings an additional limud, which has broader application then, not just to who it is, but also to the nature of the nether, and that would explain why the Mishnah has all these different cases. The Ran over here says, this only teaches us, the word Ota only appears by Hafara, does not appear by Kiyum, which would imply that over here, this would only have application by Hafara and not by Kiyum. By Kiyum, if you made a mistake, it wouldn't matter. That's what it seemingly is. And the Ran says, don't tell me that there's a hekesh between Hafara and Kiyum, and therefore whatever is true by Hafara is true by Kiyum, because the Gemara in a number of places has noted halachot that are unique to Hafara and not Kiyum. We had a braita that was that the Ran notes before, which said these are the chumrot of Hafara neged Kiyum, and these are the chumrot of Kiyum versus Hafara. And we don't say, oh, hekesh, and everything should be the same. They only, Gemara doesn't apply it universally. And he says, you know what, in the end, it's not really a hekesh. It's just a smichu de parsha, which is isha, yikimenu isha yiferenu. So the things are found next to each other. In certain instances, we draw parallels between them. When what's written in that pasuk is relevant. But that doesn't mean everything in the Darim in that way. So the Ran says, our Gemara seems to indicate that this is only true by Afara, not by Kiyum. The Ran is uncomfortable with that, and he says, I don't agree, but I think it comes out of a different limud. Now, the limud that he brings from the Sifrei is actually the limud in the Sifrei for exactly what we're saying here. It replaces the limud that we have here. But on the other hand, the Ran uses that limud as an extra limud, and in doing so, he says, now I have a source for the Kiyum side of it, which is Vehecharish La, that he was silent towards her. So now, there, La is also a miyut. It's specifying who he's silent towards, who the Kiyum is towards. And therefore, the Ran says, whatever is true now by Afara is also true by Hakama, because now I have a source in the Pasuk for Hakama and a source for Afara. And he says, Umikan nir alila alocha, teheche de pshita la'el. Just like it was clear before in the Gemara, the Baal enu mefer l'shtena shav ka'achat, that he's not allowed to be mefer the nedarim of two of his wives simultaneously, de ota, because ota means you have to be mefer each one individually, you have to know who it is, you have to deal with each one individually, and which each nether individually. Hachnami enu mikayim l'shtena shav ka'achat. He can also not be mikayim their nedarim in one shot. Galah, dafka. Because La, like the Ran says over here, is also Dafka, and therefore, just like over here, we're learning that you have to know who the woman is, so do that will limit your ability to do it en masse, to be made fair, or make him the Nidareem in one shot, and not specify who women are. So now, we're going to stop here. The Gemara is going to say, wait, you're taking this Dafka, we have other instances where that doesn't seem to be the case, and we'll question that tomorrow. So we'll stop here at the bottom of Pei Vav Amud Bet.